This episode of the Red and White Podcast is brought to you by Roback, roback.com, performance apparel company. They make polos, hoodies, Q-zips that are legit just the best fit and the best feel. I know you've seen the little dog logo on people's shoulders. That's Roback. They gave you a 20% off coupon if you use the code REDWHITE. So go support the sponsors of the podcast. Go get yourself some sick apparel. And thanks for listening. I was raised by the wolves. I was raised by the wolves. I was raised by the wolves. 8 to 4. Run through the night, playing with your life. Going against the pack, that's risk in your life. Better play it right. All right, folks, we are back with another edition of the Red and White Podcast. I'm your host, Evan, and I hit that button twice. I apologize. Here with my co-host, Will, after the Notre Dame, I don't even know what to call it, aftermath, whatever. But you know what, Will? I did something fun.
You went
fun
to confession
today
and asked for us to be a Catholic team?
I was out in the... I should have done that. There's a Catholic church right down the road. No, I was jumping on the trampoline with my kids, and I was like, I haven't done this in years. Jumped on the trampoline, and I was thinking about this football game for some ridiculous reason. I don't know. It was one of those things made me smile. One of them didn't. I don't know where I was going with that, but I had a lot of fun jumping on
the
trampoline.
The Notre Dame game didn't make you smile? Yeah. The ups and downs of bouncing on that trampoline. No.
I had a good transition in my head, and I really lost it before I hit record, so sorry about that. Anyway, trampolines are fun. If you haven't done that, go jump on trampoline.
No, I might like it.
You feel better. But what did not make me feel better is watching back the state game. I watched it back. Where are your thoughts right now? I'll just let you go. What are you thinking about this game? How do you feel after this game?
Well, I'm really glad we were driving down in that horrific storm and decided to turn around and go home. So I was really glad for whoever bought my tickets that I posted like 15 minutes before the game started. Thank you to whoever you were. Dude, that game sucked. Wow. Outcome wise, it was kind of frustrating, right? Because I feel like if that storm hadn't come along, at least on defense, they looked completely out of sync as an offense. Notre Dame, that is. And so I thought, man, you know, the first couple plays, couple drives, Hartman nearly threw a pick, definitely fumbled the ball. I was like, you know, this looks like it's going to be a big upset day. Once the offense settles in, everything's going to turn around. You know, then we had the delay. We came back, we let them score immediately. And I said, oh man, okay, well that's two games back to back now that we've let up massive explosive plays. Then there were more. And it felt like a weird mix of 2019 dregs with like 2022 offense. It was just hard. But at the same time, it's like I watched that game thinking back or thought about it afterwards. I was like, okay, you could lose that game. How does that game or what we saw there? Is there anything positive to take away from it? I guess maybe that's the most talented team we'd face, but I also felt like the offense was like one of the least dynamic, you know? So it felt like that was an offense that we could scheme for, but I knew it was going to be a mismatch because I don't know, you could go back to all the Boston College games, right? Anytime we play like a big physical offensive line and even one that's missing like every starter possible, we still struggle against them for some reason. So I guess I wasn't really surprised by the outcome, but it was just really disappointing. The offense was really frustrating. I really liked seeing what the young guys do. It's very clear there's a inherent skill advantage, right? What I'm saying is you could look at it and be like, there's a positive, and then you can literally see the negative right across from it. So I just think it's a tough game to walk away from and be like, oh, I got a good feeling. The only thing I thought leaving that watching probably at the end of the game, I was like, man, I think maybe Vegas was right. Maybe this is a 6.5 win team and maybe I should never doubt Vegas again when it's so weird. And, you know, it jives up with what everyone was saying from the scrimmages. And I don't know.
Well, yeah, I don't buy that. They've been wrong so far before. I don't think that there's any sort of enlightenment in what Vegas has to when it comes to setting our lines. I just think that they're playing the odds there. Is, you know, historically, State's a 500 team, and I know what you're going with that, and I don't think there's any connection to it, right? I think the combination of not looking good against UConn getting blown out by Georgia State, and then, you know, the way that fourth quarter fell apart for NC State really makes people feel bad. And I get it, right? I was upset at first. I'm, you know, disappointed they had a chance to win. And I'm just like every other State fan, like, man, we had a chance and we blew it and we stink and there's no offense. And then I started to digest it. I started to watch it back again, tried to understand it. And honestly, you know, I thought our lines held up well. I thought they pass protected well. I thought our defensive line actually really pushed Notre Dame's offensive line when they needed to, not consistently. There were some times when they didn't bring pressure, and that gave Hartman too much time. I think he's too good for letting him sit back like that. But when you did disrupt him, he did make mistakes. He did fumble. He did throw some bad passes. There was a lot of good things to take out of it. Now, it's disappointing that the offense feels so disjointed. I don't think there's any flow to it. There's no cohesion. I don't think there's any balance to it, right? Data always talks about balance. You know, we're very one-dimensional. And in a game where you have a two-hour break and it's raining and it's all that, you can't have your top two running backs getting eight carries. I think that is that's recipe for failure. And that's what we saw. And I don't know, man. Like, I was upset at first, and I am disappointed that we lost, because 24-17 going into the fourth quarter, you get the fumble there and you can't convert. But trying to look at it semi-objectively, I don't think it's awful. Like, it's disappointing. You had a chance to beat a top 10 team. I think it's a very winnable game. Everybody said Notre Dame's top 10. We'll see how that shakes out as the season goes along. They very well could lose a couple of their next games. They are, I don't know. I don't think it was as bad as I initially felt. And I want to talk some people down off the ledge, because I don't think it was as bad as what they initially saw. Like, I think there are some positive things, like you said, to take out of it. You know, Notre Dame had eight plays for 320 yards out of 74 plays. Defense held their own for the most part. I think where we're really lacking is in the backfield there. I think the safeties have, I think there's been a lot of miscommunications with safeties that guys have gotten behind them. I mean, you're really showing you're missing Tanner Engel and Tyler Baker Williams, and now Jakeen Harris is out for the year. Those guys were really crucial to letting the linebackers work freely. You could see Peyton Wilson like turn his head to look behind him to try to direct traffic. You know, you need that coming from the safety, so they're looking forward. And I think it's, you know, you take away those eight plays, and I know it's cherry picking, right? But out of 74 plays, they had eight explosive plays that dictated the game, 320 yards of offense. State fared pretty well defensively. I know some people are going to rip the defense because they gave up 45 points, but, you know, it's the same thing we've talked about before. Your offense puts you in bad positions. I mean, your defense gets you the ball in good positions. Your offense can't capitalize. You can only do that so many times before it wears down, right? You can't expect your defense to hold teams in college football anymore. Like, it just doesn't work like that, man. And I think we'll get into a little bit more particular, but I don't know. I left feeling not as bad as I did the first time I watched it, when I watched it live. Now, a 19% offensive success rate. Everybody was beating the drum about the 62% offensive success rate in the UConn game. Now that was 19. So there's definitely some issues. Where do you stand on Brendan Armstrong's
performance? I mean, you see all the limitations that we've seen in the past. Though, I don't know. Like, when we played Bryce Perkins, he looked limited against us under an eye. And then when we played Brendan Armstrong, I thought he looked limited, and that was under an eye too. So I just wonder if this is kind of offense that without a really good true quarterback, it's really easy to control it. I mean, we even, all things considered, right, we controlled the Syracuse game last year too, right? So I shouldn't be surprised if a relatively good defense, and Notre Dame at least defensively looked really good to me. The linebacker, like especially how well the linebackers were playing and running. And again, maybe it's just not complicated. So what do I think about Brennan? He's having to run a lot, so I'm not surprised. I don't know. Like the announcer was like, how did he miss Jordan Houston here in the end zone wide open after he scrambled for like 38 yards in 20 different directions? And I was like, well, I don't know. Jordan Houston's not that tall. And he's wearing a red uniform in a red end zone. It's not hard for me to think that Brent Armstrong doesn't see this guy. So, like, I don't think he was set up for success, I guess, is what I'll come down to. But again, part of that just comes down to, like, okay, I'm going to keep it focused on Brennan. Mechanics are what they are. They are what we always thought they were. He doesn't throw a great ball. It is what it is. He doesn't have the targets to throw to it like he did at UVA, right? Where he could just throw these big jump balls and let him go 50-50. We saw that, like, where Keon Lassane, right? They threw those two go routes basically to him. One turned out well, but he had to dive and catch it and had no yak from it. And then the other was broken up, if I recall. So it's just, he's like the wrong quarterback for the skill composition I think we have.
Yeah, I don't know, man. Like, I was disappointed in, you look at the numbers, you're like, yeah, it's not a good game. But then you look at how many drops he had. Not him, but like his receivers had. And, ball hits dude in the hands, Concepcion in the hands, and gets picked. And you're like, I know that goes on the quarterback, but that was a good pass.
That happens.
Right in the hands. A couple of those things, I'm just like, yeah, it happens. And I watched it initially. And I'm like, Jesus, this guy's terrible. Or this is, what the 2021 Virginia was, an aberration, and this is the reality, right? That's what I started thinking. And then I'm watching it again. I'm like, I don't know if this is all him. It's somewhere in between there. I think he does have a little bit of happy feet, which to me indicates he doesn't trust the offensive line yet. But I thought the offensive line was okay in pass protection for the most part. I'm not sure if that was the game plan. I kind of feel like the teams are going to scheme NC State to make them run. Right? They're going to drop eight and say, all right, run on us if you can, because you can't run on anybody. And that just puts pressure on Armstrong to, beat him. And I don't know what, that he can do that. Right. Yeah. And he doesn't have the help to do that. So I'm kind of in between on my feelings about how this all shakes out. Like, he's not going to beat you with his arm, right? And if they're, baiting you into do that, then I think we're in trouble. I feel like teams have kind of understand the scheme on him already. And maybe this offense. And maybe that's just me reading too much into it. I think he won't
beat you with his arm from the pocket. Unless he's like completely, unpressured, right? I think he beats you with his arm when he's, with his scrambling. I think he's got that playmaking ability. So that's his little upside. But, I just got to go back for a second. When you were talking about those drops, you're talking about KC's. I thought Porter Rook's like back-to-back drops were unacceptable. And I don't care if it's raining, just, dude, that's 2 weeks in a row now where you aren't making the play to make up for that either. And, that's, I just, the more, when I left the game, I thought, I think it's very easy to blame Brennan Armstrong, but I bet you could put MJ Morrison in this group and it's still going to struggle if you're going to put these receivers out here and they're going to play like this. And it's, I'll save it if we want to talk about like skill personnel in a few minutes, but like, I thought there were some good connections with him and KC. With him and Vereen, like, he looked good at times. And quite frankly, like, you know, what was it? It was, I mean, dude, I mean, if they don't let up that freaking touchdown coming out of the storm break, and then that one at the very end of the half where it's like, how many times do I have to like complain about, I don't care if you give up a touchdown in normal defense. It kills me when you sit back and rush three on Sam Hartman. He will eventually pick you apart. I don't understand why they do this year in, year out with him. They're just always like, hey, end of the half, let's just let Sam just easily walk up and down the field and at least get 3 points. Or hell, seven. Like, it was decisions like that where it's like, are you trying to win this game? Because they were just trying to get to halftime at that point. And I thought that was a big, you know, so you take those 14 points out, like the game's wildly different going into the third quarter. Right. And so it's, yeah. I think that's what's frustrating for State fans is you sit there and you watch those three quarters and you're like, man, we are so close with just some competence of offense. And then you go, oh man, I was saying that all last year, you know, and then you're, oh man, I was saying that in 2019, you know, so it's just hard because you thought Robert and I was going to get to come in and kind of unleash the wide receiver talent that you think is there. And then, you know, for whatever reason, the scheme looks the same. And my guess is it's because you basically have the same skill players as last year. And if you're going to force certain skill players to keep playing, I mean, the limitations are there. Like,
yeah, I think that is what's probably the most disappointing about it is you expected to be a little bit more dynamic on offense. I mean, I don't know why they're not running any zone reads for Brandon Armstrong. Why are they not, you know, getting him moving out of the pocket? It's just, I feel like there's a lot of things that they could be doing. And again, we said this for the last couple of years and we're like, is Tim Beck's a problem? And you're like, man, this is the same stuff we just watched. And if there was any semblance of an offense, then, you know, you have a chance in this game. And I like what Marcus Freeman said at the end. Somebody asked him at the end of half, yeah. And there's like 40 seconds or whatever it was. And they came down and scored. And he's like, anytime there's time on the clock, we're trying to score. And when is the last time NC State has ever had that mentality? There's a clear disconnect in what works in today's college football. And I don't think we quite get it for some reason. I don't know what that is, but I've seen us sit on our hands with, you know, more time than what Marcus Freeman and them had. And that's stuff like that's what's frustrating. It's like fundamental. And that's what makes us come back to saying, I've seen this before, right? I know how this story ends. I've seen this story before. And maybe it is the talent. That's the other part of it, right? We've talked about it, and I think everybody's talking about it right now, is why are you still forcing these same guys into the rotation? Why is Michael Allen getting one carry?
Did you go back and, like, watch his snaps? Like, did he get? Yeah, I'm, like, curious. I didn't watch his snaps. I don't know the snap chart, right? Like, I'm curious if he was in there for, like, three plays, right, and then blew two blocking assignments, you know? But if blocking is a problem for him, then why is he not repping blocking all camp every week? Like, he's clearly more talented. Like, I hate to say it, but it's like, I don't know how many times I have to watch Jordan Houston run into the wall of a defense of, you know, that has any sort of athleticism and him not go anywhere. Like, it's just, it's not working. It's like, there's so many players on this team that are in the wrong position. Jordan Houston is probably a slot receiver. Keon Lassane is probably a slot receiver. You know, that's two guys that are on the field that are senior players that have been here a long time that are, you know, being put in a position because they probably do everything right off the field, but they cannot make it click completely on the field. And it's driving me nuts. And I hate watching Keon on the outside when I think he'd be much better on the inside. And then you watch KC doing great on the inside and you're like, well, that's probably why they're doing this. Because the young guys are better and they're trying to like make everyone happy. And I wish they would stop. Just put the tall guys on the outside that can catch jump balls. Try to find a way to get Keon somewhat involved in the game. And then get with these young guys who clearly have skill. Like I am so tired of the, well, you got to let the veterans do the veteran thing. No, it's not going to work. Now you could probably go out there and again, maybe that's probably the best defense I think, that we're going to face on the schedule, followed by Clemson, and then, you know, TBD, whoever, like, probably Miami, based on what we just saw, right? And so, you know, I think it's time over the next few weeks to just rep the young guys and put people in their natural positions and stop. Just tell guys like, hey, I'm sorry, you're going to see a diminished role until we can get things worked out and find packages that work for you. Cause like this square peg round hole thing, it's like, we've seen it so many years now. And I guess I'll forgive Tim Beck, cause maybe it was the same thing. He was like, I got to play these are the only guys I got. I got Devin Carter, Thayer Thomas, Keon Lassane, right? And I don't trust anyone else behind these guys. And so they have to run everything, but you've got all these guys kind of playing out of position. So instead of being like, it's a one for one, you've got kind of like a 0.9, you know, there's like an inefficiency there. And it's really hard to probably win this game if you're constantly having inefficiencies against talented teams. Maybe it works with the less talented teams.
Yeah, I'm looking at the participation. Somebody's updating it right now. I don't know who is doing it, but Michael Allen has... he had 20 reps or 20 plays he was in on.
I wonder if a lot of that was special team. Do we have that many special teams plays?
It could have been special teams. Yeah, I mean.
Hey,
I don't know. Regardless of what it is, he's your best running back. Why is he not getting the ball? Why is he not in the game? And that's one of the things that frustrates me about all of this, right? All of what we're talking about, what we have been talking about. Like, I know clearly we can boil it down to it's a recruiting problem and they have not recruited the offensive side of the ball well. And I think it's almost more than that. Right? I don't know if they've recruited and I don't think they've utilized what they had or they have not developed. The lack of development from some of these guys to me is questionable. Right? Porter Rooks is mind-blowing how he has just stayed the same since freshman year. If not regressed. This guy's a highly rated recruit. He was coming in when Josh Downs was. I was like, all right, he's our guy. And it ain't working. And I don't know how we've developed any skill position or who we've developed in the skill positions, you know, in the last 5 years. That's a short list.
Yeah, it seems.
It's a real short list. And I think that's an issue to me. I have no trust in – I was thinking about this today. Like, hypothetical, Dave takes the Michigan State job, right, and he brings people with him. Who would I want to keep? It's basically everybody on the defensive side of the ball. Like, I wouldn't mind keeping Gibson. I wouldn't mind keeping Wild. I wouldn't mind keeping Mitchell and some of those guys, right? I feel like they're doing a pretty good job in – developing and executing what they want to do. On the offensive side, I just haven't seen anything from anybody.
Well, so I would say on the defensive side, right, there's a lot of cohesiveness, right? Is it Mitchell and Gibson were on staff together before, or was it Mitchell and Wiles? I can't remember, right? But there's several guys on that on the defensive side that have spent time with each other, right? So there's that connections there. I think they're very experienced. The system hasn't been changing, right? It's been the same thing since 2018, 2019? I can't remember when we made the full shift or not. So I think there's a point there to why that's more stable. But I will also say, like, it seems like the talent evaluations for the 3-3-5 have been much better across the board than on offense, right? And defense is harder. Yeah. And I don't know why you would think, you know, aside from like success with Manny and the Chuck the Chest era, right? It's hard to be able to pinpoint and say NC State has all of this recent NFL experience to go back on, right? Like they just seem to always get it. And it probably makes sense. Like Dave's the head coach from the defensive side, right? And he's got the defensive staff he has. So maybe that makes sense. So I think that's in part one thing, right? So you've had on the offensive side, right? We've had the drink and Kitchings, McDonald, and Beck, right, eras before you even get to Anai, who hasn't even had time to recruit. So you've got the leftovers from the 2019 class that are still here, right? Because those are the guys, Lassane and those fellas, were from 2019. And so those guys came in at the worst year of our program, and the guys that came right after them came in the worst year of our program. And all that influx and change, and who knows, you know, COVID. So it, I guess it makes sense that we had all kinds of maybe possible bad evaluations on that side, and we're just, it's just rearing its head these last 2 years of not being able to take the next step because you just completely missed on skill players, or you don't really have any developed offensive line depth, right? It's just all across the board on that side. It feels like a lot of almost theirs. Like you took a lot of chances and then it just didn't pay off. Counterpoint, maybe some of those you haven't, well, I was going to say maybe, but
I mean, some of that is maybe
also haven't given certain guys the chance to pay off. Right.
That's the problem.
Yeah, I'll take it.
I think that's the problem. I look at Carolina and they seem to play their young guys. And I look at a guy like Julian Gray, who I think is just a dynamic athlete. And I don't get why they don't get him the ball more. Why is he not on the field more? I mean, right now, you know, to your point, the three best players seem to be two freshmen and a 30-year-old transfer from Rice. Right? That's not a real good recipe for success. But how did we get here? And then why aren't we leveraging the young guys more? I think that's, it's a big question. It's the same question we've had for a long time. And I don't expect them to be perfect, right? I don't expect the young guys to go in there and, you know how to block 100% or, you know, do any of these things 100% right, like an upperclassman will. But if they give you more upside, I think you need to take that chance on the offensive side of the ball. I mean, excuse me. Somebody had a good quote. I cut it from somewhere and I can't remember if this is the pod chat or message board, but it was, your best running back has one carry for 4 yards. He has one less carry than Keon Lassane, three less carries than Delbert Mims. Yeah. What the hell are we even trying to do on offense? And that's kind of what sums it up for me. And I think that's where I'm just disconnected with everything. And it's got to be on Joker and that and the offensive side of the ball, right? I mean, I think those, the lack of skill positions with impact players is just, it's unbelievably high right now. And I can't remember a time when we've been in this position and you're not giving the guys a chance, you know, for whatever reason, seniority or, you know, blocking or what, I don't know what it is, but it's not working. And I was thinking, I watched the Carolina App game the other night, and I'm watching Omarion Hampton run for 200 plus yards in that game. And I'm thinking, this is another year where Carolina's got a better running game than we do. And that is Dave's bread and butter. That's something he's always wanted to do. He's always prided himself on it. And the excuse we always heard from everybody was, well, they've had a running quarterback with Sam Howell or whoever. We got a running quarterback too, and that hasn't helped our running game a lick. I don't know what it is. But it's frustrating to no end that we are in this position again where you're wondering, are we going to waste another, you know, decent defense with an offense that is just inept? It's so stale to me, and I'm so tired of having this conversation because it's the same conversation we've had for the last 3 years. And there's always some excuse for it. Oh, we don't have a running quarterback, so we, you know, it's too much pressure on our run game. Oh, you know, we don't have any help to anybody to help Icky, or, you know, we don't have any, you know, big wide receivers, or we don't have any fast wide receivers, or we don't have any big and fast wide receivers. I don't know what it is, but it's a bit of everything. There always seems to be an excuse for it. At some point, there's got to be some accountability to why your offense has just been absolute hamstring to the program.
I just can't believe you watched that UNC App game and didn't ask yourself, how the hell does App always seem to look fast in their run game every time they play?
Yeah, I mean, you know? Yeah. Go look at, yeah, exactly. I mean, that App running back, it looks like Keon Lassane. And I always said Keon Lassane should be running back.
Yeah.
I think he'd probably be better in that position.
I just kept thinking to myself watching that game, I was like, well, I just watched UNC's defensive line destroy South Carolina, right? And it was like the second coming of that defense, right? And all we heard about, right?
Yeah.
And then App State's little offensive line just goes in there and pretty much has it under relatively under control. And I'm sitting there going like, okay, maybe it's because we've had the coaching turnover or whatnot, but I was like, why do we look so discombobulated? Why do these teams look so fast and fluid on offense? And we just look like we're just like running through mud all the time. Like that's what's confusing me.
Yeah.
Is just, I don't think it's that hard to have a modern offense, but, and yet here we are. And so then I have to say, well, maybe it's the guys we have. Like, I'm really not trying to be cruel when I say this, but if I told you this offseason that Lassane, Rooks, Tootle, Penix, Houston, and Mims had all went in the transfer portal, and you were just getting to replace them with whatever combination of wide receivers and running backs you wanted and tight ends, do you think the offense would be any worse? No, that's the problem. And no. Like, these are all good guys.
And we keep hearing about Trent Penix, a secret weapon. It ain't working, guys. At some point, these guys don't just magically become studs. If they've got it when they're here, they've got it, right? They don't magically become something they're not. And no offense to Trent Penix, but they keep trying to push him as the secret weapon, the matchup nightmare, whatever. And same thing with Tootle. Those guys have been...
But
just MIA.
That's my point.
Zebro, right? Twins, MIA.
Like, Penix is supposed
to, you know.
Yeah.
Somehow Juice Vereen, the freshman, is getting playing time at tight end when we can't get Michael Allen in at running
back. Like, the thing with Penix is the thing that frustrates me, because if he's supposed to be a matchup nightmare, which is what we heard the last 2 years, right? Then why is he not on the field the whole time finding matchup issues, right? Like, that's where I'm sitting here going, what is happening? Yeah. Like, are you not trying to win these games? Are you trying to win them in the hardest way possible? Because, yeah, to your point, right? Certain guys are getting burned. And, like, it just doesn't make sense what we're seeing correlated. And, like, the guys I just listed off, like, especially, like, Penix and Lassane, like, again, I think they're out of position. Houston, out of position. I think if you put them on a different team and said, here you go, you get to go play slot receiver, or you get to go play running back, or you're a safety instead of on offense, I think they'd be fine. And that's the problem, is I think we are, for whatever reason, not just going full bore with the young guys. We could have gone full bore in the portal. We could drop like three wide receivers off this team. You wouldn't even notice. And you could have gotten three offensive linemen. And maybe it's a completely different scenario on the line. Like, it's stuff like that where I really feel like, after last year, there should have been maybe a little bit of a colder calculus in the Murphy Center, right? And said, we really love you. You've been here through COVID and you're a great teammate. And like, we know it's a risk to let you go, but we really think you need to go somewhere else because we've got to go in a different direction and we got to give Robert what he needs and whatever. Give whatever air cover you need. But this is really frustrating to watch. And so, you know, it's like you're watching go routes for Lassane. And I keep sitting there going, well, okay, he doesn't catch one. He catches one. He doesn't catch one, right? I'm like, is that any better than Anthony Smith running the exact same route, being four steps on the defender and dropping it and catching it and dropping it and catching it and dropping it and dropping it and catching it? Like, it doesn't. One of those has the upside to actually make a massive play. The other is, at best, against good cornerbacks, getting a 50-50 ball and on the sideline, right? And that's just not what I thought we were going to do. And I don't understand it.
Anthony Smith is now on the two deep at X receiver, one of those receiver positions. So maybe there's some hope for it. But how much of it is a chemistry issue between the coaches and the players and the players and the quarterback? And, you know, is that it? Are they not in sync?
I mean,
is
there something there?
Like, cool.
Right?
It feels like
there.
Yeah, feels like it.
Probably a couple of things going on. Well, caveat, right? We're not at practice, so we don't get to see these things. But yeah, I'm sure Anai doesn't trust his guys. Maybe he sees a guy make a play, then he doesn't make a play, and he goes like, well, what am I going to do? I got to go with the reliable guy who maybe is limited. So I could see there's mistrust there or apprehension in the staff, I can totally see why Brendan Armstrong would be completely confused about who he's throwing to, especially if you've got young guys who need to be making the right kind of route changes, and maybe they're not doing it, so it's making him think longer. I can see that factoring in. And then maybe there's just general chemistry issues with the team. Like, you have what Peyton Wilson was saying, but there's probably parts of the team on offense, too, that probably saw last year and saw how MJ Morris played and say, what are we doing here? Right? Like, why are we going this route if this guy can't hit an open guy? So there's probably all kinds of things going on. So they got to have a little, that's what I was kind of saying. Like, they got to have a little coming to Jesus moment, and they got to say, are we going to go full bore one direction, or are we going to keep, you know, limiting ourselves basically and trying to grind this out? Again, it could totally work once you get into ACC play. Maybe Notre Dame is as good as you think they are, but man, I don't know. I've seen, we saw this last year, right? And it was like, yeah, the ECU game, the Texas Tech game, you saw all these kind of problems. And then, you know, you're at Florida State and you're grinding it out and you're barely scoring, right? And then Leary got injured. You know, there's a lot of good teams on the schedule this year. Like, Clemson's bad for Clemson, but they're still good. Miami looks like they're improved, right? You know, Louisville offense looks good. You know, so it's like you just look at it and you're like, shit, like, this are a lot of teams to deal with. I guess I would just rather lean in on the youth, get them as much opportunity as you can to keep those guys around and build off of them and have some excitement to point to. And I'd rather see that. I can't sit there and enjoy watching kind of like the helter skelter of old guy, new guy, old guy, new guy, old guy, new guy.
It looks so disjointed and there's no rhythm. And again, I would ask this question is, what are we supposed to be doing on offense? What are we supposed to be looking at? What's our identity on offense? Because I can't articulate it by watching it, and it doesn't match what the coaches always tell us. We want to be more explosive.
Excuse me.
The Wisconsin hybrid, the Wisconsin Oregon baby, right? I mean, that's Dave's line, and it's just never gotten there.
It hasn't gotten to Madison.
Hasn't gotten there. But really,
with Phil Longo.
they didn't look so good. But I think to me, just the fundamentals of not being able to run the ball at this point in the staff's tenure is borderline unacceptable. You want to be a hard-nosed team, and you yet again cannot run the ball. And I that's a real issue. And I'm not putting it on 2J because he just got here. He hadn't recruited anybody. But it's the same issues we've had for the last few years. And other teams seem to find a way to run the ball, and we cannot. And you can't win if you're one-dimensional. You can't win against these teams that are more talented than you. We've said it 100 times. You can win if you develop talent, you keep them around. If you're not going to recruit the elite, you have to out-coach them. You have to develop your younger guys into good players and then out-scheme them. And we are not doing that. Nobody's having any trouble stopping us. The UConn thing, I mean, to me, that's wild. And another quarterback went out in that game against Georgia State. But that running back had 11 carries for 17 yards against Georgia State. They had no problem.
Didn't we say last week, right? You take out that one explosive and they were like 3 yards a carry or something like that. Right? And I do think.
But again, that one explosive play, was an aberration. Right. We gave up eight this game. It's not an aberration anymore. Yeah. Like, it's, well, there's an issue there. So, like, I just, the combination of that UConn game and this game have me feeling like.
Do we have a David Amerson play problem again? Like, with Aiden White, underperforming, I mean, the rumors that the players were basically, I don't know, everything I read after the game was the players were basically saying, like, if you're not going to tackle and try to make a play every single time, then, like, get off the field. Yeah.
Oh, right. Peyton Wilson's comments, he said, were, and apparently it was the tone and how he said it, very highly frustrated and trying to essentially call out his team that we're better when all 11 guys are going to the ball. And then Peyton Wilson, God love him, is an absolute freak. The way he ran down two of those wide receivers, you're just like, holy cow. It was just unbelievable. Like Jim Nagy, Senior Bowl guy, tweeted out a couple of his highlights, and he is something else. But he needs help because we don't have any other elite athletes that can just do it by being athletes. They need to be smarter players. And that backside of the defense, I think from the safety side and the backfield is leaves a lot to be desired.
No, I still think it's an offensive problem. Yeah, obviously, like being able to put up points is important. Like, we're not.
Yeah, we knew this offense wasn't going to be. I mean, the defense wasn't going to be as good as last year's defense, but they were disruptive enough. And this is what we've always said: they're trying to be disruptive. They're not going to hold you to 0 points. They're trying to be disruptive, turn you over, so that you can capitalize on it. And we sure did. All right, that the getting the ball inside their 20 and not being able to score was just a backbreaker. And State started in the first half. State started their own 49, or Notre Dame 49, their own 40, their own 40, their own 38. They had good field position and just could not capitalize. So the defense is doing what it's supposed to be doing, is being disruptive. You know, they've got some fumbles. They forced some fumbles. They were close to making some picks. They got you the ball back when they needed to. And when the offense just can't capitalize, I just think it puts too much pressure on them. And I know, like, James Henderson and I will disagree about this because he's going to be like, well, the defense gave up 45 points. Well, yeah, they gave up 45 points because your offense couldn't do anything, and they're on the field every, you know, 4 minutes.
I think it was either Anai or Armstrong was saying it about Anai that they at like their keys every week is they want to score at least 31. They want to have a certain amount of explosives, right? And so 2 weeks in a row, right, you've missed the goal. You know, I don't know what we would count as an explosive.
The technical definition, I looked it up. Technical definition is a 12-yard run or a 16-yard pass play.
Right, but true explosives. Yeah. But even then, if we were clicking in 12 to 16-yard plays all the time, you'd be saying, yep, that's explosive. Or at least it's got some firepower. But, you know, it's just 2 weeks in, right? Haven't seen it.
Yeah. Now,
you can make some arguments. Oh, first game on the road, new players. Well, okay, fine. UConn, I'll give you the break. Notre Dame, good defense. Okay, yeah. Got behind the chains and theories. Yes. But it's, I mean, you really got to see this change in the next couple weeks. And it can't just be the beat up on the small team and then, you know, struggle your way with Marshall. And then, you know, we just got to see some improvement, man. This just what it comes down to.
Yeah, it's a game of missed opportunities, and that's becoming the defining MO of this staff's tenure lately, right? Missed opportunities. You've had a lot of chances to capitalize on other teams being down, the league being winnable, or just putting yourself in the right position. And I get it. Like, if it's not a non-conference game, we haven't even gotten to conference play yet. So take that with a grain of salt. But it's just another missed opportunity, a nationally televised top 10 game. And, you know, defense gets a turnover in the red zone. They don't score. Drops by the wide receivers that would have extended drives. Silly penalties. You know, get a score to tighten the game, keep it close, and then have a missed defensive assignment. Notre Dame scores a touchdown. You're like, it's missed opportunities. And that's kind of where we are with it. I clipped the Cover 3 pod talking about the Notre Dame. It was mostly the Notre Dame game. And I know people's feelings about Chip Patterson, but here it is.
There's also that piece of this, which is like Brennan Armstrong putting on a Jordan Lynch suit to beat UConn is fine, but like
Jordan Lynch suit, that's a deep cut, man.
It's a Dave Doran cut. I mean, that's I saw Dave Doran look out at Brennan Armstrong with hearts in his eyes. In that UConn game on that Thursday night, he was like, I got myself a Jordan Lynch. He'll go out there. But, like, you can't run a MAC offense and be able to beat teams with strong top 15, top 20 level talent on defense. And that is exactly where Notre Dame is. And those wide receivers are young and they're a little bit inexperienced and they're kind of piecemealing it together with a couple transfers. There were some drops that led to interceptions. Like it is an offense that is not exactly plug and play. And like, shout out to my guy, Wes Durham. Like he mentioned this before the season even started. He said, everyone's going back to Robert and I and Brennan Armstrong in 2021. But that group had an experienced offensive line, experienced skill players, and they'd been in the system. He said, if you want to know the highs and the lows, he said, go back to the Bryce Perkins UVA team, which granted for UVA standard won a lot of games, but had some highs and lows. And I think that that's probably a good expectation to set. Brennan Armstrong's not throwing for 400 yards a game, but there you made the right hire with Robert and I. You just ran up against a really, really good defense that was seasoned, dialed in. I think that the year two of Al Golden matters, and I think that they're in a good spot right now. Notre Dame is not a top 10 team because their name is Notre Dame. Notre Dame is a top 10 team because that is their quality.
So I get what he's saying, and I somewhat agree. I think the difference between Notre Dame that in Notre Dame is Marcus Freeman has faced Robert and I for the past three seasons. So I wonder, or
no,
Brennan Armstrong. I forgot what the maybe it was Robert. Yeah, and I.
He faced an I offenses like three seasons now.
And yeah, three straight years, right? So he's got the UConn book played, on the way. Maybe he knows
Syracuse what that's last like. Year, us last year, and us this year, obviously, right? So they know our personnel. Yeah. They've seen an I's offense. They had all offseason to plan for it, right? First game, so I could see to that point, right? That's probably the worst combination of teams for an I to start off with here, right? It doesn't excuse the disappointment with our playmakers.
No.
But I could see why schematically, teams look very prepared for us the last few weeks.
There was some positives. I said it already, but I think the offensive line held up in pass protection when it needed to.
Yeah, I didn't think they were perfect. A problem.
I thought, they were. I don't think they were a problem. I don't think they were great, but I don't think they were a problem. I think, who was the other one? Jalen Coit, we were talking about earlier. I think I gave him some grief in the first two games. He looked like he was quick to call a fair catch. I think maybe he settled in and he actually, ran a couple back that probably could have fair caught and I wouldn't have complained. So maybe he's settling in there. I feel like he did a pretty decent job getting some yards on the return, catching the ball, making the right call there. Defense, I thought, gave the offense some opportunities. I thought there was some real, there's not going to be a lot of teams, again, as talented as Notre Dame. And I think the defense really showed that they can be disruptive and they can stress even when you have an elite offensive line, right? A couple of those guys in the Notre Dame offensive line are pros. I just think it was overall, gave up some big plays and couldn't make a big play. That's kind of summarizes how I feel about that game. I don't think the season's over. Everybody in the ACC is still beatable. State just has a lot of work to do, and maybe that's probably the right way to look at it. It's not as grim as we thought it was, but they better do some self-evaluating and be willing to make some risks in order to get this offense on track, because they absolutely have to.
What I would say is, other teams in the ACC look rough as well. That's what makes it more frustrating, right? If you have a competent offense and a good defense, this is a year that you can capitalize. Right. And so it's just, it just feels like another year where it's going to be a missed opportunity. You're going to grind it out. You get to 7 wins. Maybe there's an opportunity to get 8. Maybe there's an opportunity to do more, but it's just going to be a butt pucker season, I think.
Yeah. I think that's right. I think it's kind of where we'll leave it. It's, and everybody kind of feels maybe a little disappointed. A little bit angry. I don't think it's all that bad. The season's there's still a lot of football to be played. Things will settle out. I want to see some progression. I think this is at some point, if we don't start you know, demanding better and we don't start seeing better, then we're just going to keep getting the same thing.
Yeah. I think to me, that's was also nice. There was a nice garbage touchdown, garbage time touchdown to Collins. Right. So maybe if he continues to progress again, that just gives you an option to do more, maybe get Lassane out of the tough spot you put Lassane in. So he can, you can optimize things a little bit better, but there's some upside there. And to your point, my guy, Ant Smith, third on the two deep. He's got.
He's going to, it's about that time. He's going to get, oh my God. He's going to get all the numbers against VMI. That's what I want to see.
And they're going to, Robert's going to go, wait, what? We're not supposed to play this guy?
Yeah. Joker, where you been hiding this guy? Why'd you get, take him out of the closet? Yeah. I think that's what's going to happen. All right, last question for you, because I put a thing on Twitter and I said, anybody have any thoughts they wanted to share? Because I really didn't want to have a Twitter analysis. And I got a ton of people. And I, obviously, everybody's main question is it time for MJ Morris?
No. But, man, it feels... I don't think MJ Morris would have been worse in the first two games. Like, so I really need to see what is driving the decision here. I don't understand the idea of like people being like, well, I want to redshirt him. Who cares? He may not be here all those years. That's bad. I don't care for that.
Yeah, no, that's just nonsense. If anybody tells you they want to redshirt somebody, just.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just trying to remember. I mean, I feel like people have said he hasn't looked sharp or wasn't sharp in the fall. Then he had that random wisdom tooth surgery. So maybe I don't know what's going on there, to be honest.
What it comes down to me is, are the receivers going to catch throw more really than good deep balls? Because I don't really want to make that decision that MJ is better than Armstrong or gives you a better upside if the receivers are still dropping balls, because I don't think that's giving Brennan a fair look, because I don't think he did anything overly stupid. I mean, a couple underthrows and a couple throws that are offline, but he's not perfect, and I don't expect him to be. But I think he probably still gives you a better chance to win.
If, I don't know, man.
You know, all things being equal,
I thought MJ looked. I'm not really confident good about against that, Wake.
But it's gotta work.
He looked good against BC until his knee got destroyed. Like, yeah.
He's confident, and I like the way he vibes with the team, right? We saw a different little bounce there by step when he came in.
Kind of what I was insinuating earlier.
There's that factor to it.
Is there some part of the team that's kind of like WTF?
Yeah.
Like, I get it. Brennan knows the offense probably better, and that's the factor. And so maybe it's just he just doesn't have it a command of it yet. But I don't know, man. If we lose like two ACC games, I think you pivot at that point and say, Brennan, here's all the NIL money you got. Take it as a signing bonus. We're going to let MJ play. It's just not working out. And that will suck, man. That would definitely suck for a dude trying to play for his last year. Because I'm guessing he can't. I'm guessing he's out of eligibility. Right?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know, man. I really like MJ Morris. And I kind of scratched my head at the it made sense on paper, but I really thought MJ Morris was pretty damn good, and I would just roll with MJ if this continues. I mean,
all right, yeah, I understand that.
No,
understand.
I'm sick.
Anything else you want to add before we get out of here?
Wish me luck at jury duty.
Go jump on a trampoline and make you feel better. Yeah. All right, y'all. It's the end is not here. Sky's not falling. We will play football again. Things will get better. So, yeah, hang in there. We'll be all right. Go have yourself a drink.
And yeah, have a Coke and a smile.
Have a Coke and a smile, right? You know what they say? Have a Coke and a smile. Yeah. All right, y'all. Thanks for listening. As always, support the pod, support the pack. Go Pack. I was raised by the waves.